You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
Wherever you're actually listening to this, you may not be where you actually are. It's simply a fact of life, a fact of science, that the vast majority of us are not where we are. We are where we think we are, which is an entirely different thing. And that is why, for example, the title of last week's episode was "We're at Our Best When We're Not Thinking." And I explained a little bit about what I meant by that from the perspective of cognitive psychology and neuroscience. People will go into work today and not turn up. People will drive along the motorway today and be enraged by things that aren't happening in reality. Let me deal with that one straight away, because people lose their minds as a result of somebody doing something to them in traffic, whereas the person doing the something to them in traffic is so oblivious to what they're doing, because they're only hell-bent, and I mean that, on wherever they think they are going, that they will cut in front of people, overtake people where they can't, do all manner of things on the road, resulting in the rage of another person who's getting annoyed with something that isn't actually really happening to them in practice right now. As I said, people will go to work this morning and not turn up. The vast majority of people don't like their job. That's not a generalization. I am quoting from decades of research that shows somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of people don't like the work they're doing. Now, again, if we allude to last week's episode with regard to us being at our best when we're not thinking, if you don't like the work that you're doing, in other words, you're thinking about the work that you're doing and you're thinking about how much you don't like it, because not liking it isn't a statement of fact, it's an emotion. Come back to emotions in a minute. How much more difficult is your work going to be as a result of you trying to do it through the fog of thought that tells you that you don't like your work? People don't like Mondays. Monday is just another day of the week. In fact, it isn't really at all. Monday is unique. This Monday was unique. A day never, ever to be repeated. People will get up every morning and say to themselves, I can't stand another day of this horror, or I can't stand another day of this stress, or I can't stand another day of wondering when my luck is going to change, or I can't stand another day in this relationship. I can't stand another day with my children behaving the way they are. Another day is never another day. It is a unique day. So if you got up this morning and you said to yourself, oh God, another Wednesday, at least we're halfway through the week, it's not another Wednesday. Today is a day that you've never lived before and a day that you will never live again. And if you are struggling to make it through the day, through the thoughts that have you thinking that it's just another Wednesday, you're not going to live this unique day either. In other words, you're not living at all. If you're wondering when your luck is going to change, as I mentioned a minute ago, you're not living at all. You're looking forward to your luck changing when in reality, you don't need luck. You need to wake up. If we don't like anything about our lives, it has nothing to do with what's going on in our lives. It has to do what we think about what is going on in our lives. Last week, again, we alluded to how much we waste our energy on wondering about what other people think of us, when in reality, they don't. They're wondering about what we think of them. And we're lost in a land that bears only a passing resemblance to the unique nature of this day, in this case, this Wednesday. Not only is it difficult, And if we come back to the example of people not turning up to work, and as a result of their state of mind making their work more difficult to do, which confirms that they were right not to like their work in the first place, if we consider that, you'll begin to understand that it is not possible for the person using their mind normally to ever do exactly what they need to do without fear nor favour. Do exactly what they need to do without wondering whether they are up to the task or not. Say whatever they need to say without wondering if they could get away with it or what would people think of them for having said what they think they might not get away with. It is very difficult for us when we use our normal mind to ever do the right thing. For one very simple reason, and this reason is just for starters. If you think today is just another day, you're already lost in the world of thought. And that means you not only do not know what is going on in the here and now, you have no chance of actually knowing what's going on in the here and now. Because the normal mind works to enable us understand, and that's the wrong word in this case, misunderstand, in fact, what is going on in the here and now by taking what is actually going on in the here and now, the reality of the moment, and filtering it through our own thought processes so that we understand what is going on in the here and now. But in the process, as I said a moment ago, we end up misunderstanding. How can that happen? Because the thought process that we use to make sense of today, just another Wednesday, is a thought process that uses thoughts that we learned when we were 3 or 4 years old, and up to the age of 11 or 12. After the age of 12 or maybe 13, we stopped learning. Full stop. Our learning mind closed down. The part of our mind that enabled us to take what we referred to recently as psychological snapshots to enhance our understanding of the world and of ourselves, that part of our brain closes down at the onset of puberty. So, what you think you know about yourself, what you think you know about how the world works, and most importantly, the thoughts that you use to enable you understand what is going on today. All of those thoughts related to your understanding of yourself and the world and your understanding of what is going on now, all of those thoughts are decades out of date. How would it be possible for you to understand what is going on in the here and now if your understanding is based on stuff that happened to you when you were a child? If you don't know what's going on in the here and now, it is impossible for you to deliberately do the right thing in the right way at the right time to move your life forward and indeed to change those aspects of your life that you think you don't like. Instead, when we misunderstand the reality of the moment, from every aspect of it, from the fact that, oh, yeah, we think today is another Wednesday, to I think I don't like my work, or I think I am going to lose weight, knowing in fact that you've tried before and you've never lost weight when you actually tried. We might come back to that, or we actually should come back to that, because a number of people, and most recently somebody just a couple of days ago, told me on a Zoom call that they started losing the weight that they would love to have lost for years as a result of not thinking about losing weight anymore. We're at our best when we're not thinking. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Your entire understanding of your life, what is going on in it, who you are, and what is happening now is based on thought, as a result of which you will automatically react to what you think is going on. That is why I said a moment ago that when we are operating in a mode that cognitive psychology calls automatic pilot, we will never act. We will always react. Now, if you do happen to do the right thing in the right way at the right time, it will be pure luck. But as I said a few minutes ago, you don't need luck. In fact, you need to wake up. You need to wake up from the illusion of the life that you think you are living. You need to wake up from the mirage of the work that you think you don't like. You need to arise from the slumber that is cast over us as a result of this shroud of thought that wraps us in a world of our own making that does not exist. We do this by meditating. You've heard me saying that on many occasions. And most people will probably have thought, and that of course is the rock on which they will perish, that meditation is a spiritual exercise, possibly even a religious exercise, and has little to do with the real world, has little to do with my being at my best during the course of my day. How could 10 minutes in the morning or 20 minutes in the morning impact my experience of my life and of me? Indeed, I've been doing this for nearly 30 years at this stage, and many of the people whom I have met along the way were, before I ever met them, regular practitioners of meditation. I recollect one particular individual who, when I met him first, had been practicing transcendental meditation for 23 years. The first morning we met, it was on an open workshop. There were six people in the room, but the first morning we met, after our first meditation, coming up to lunchtime on that first morning, he said to me, "I've never experienced anything like that before." He said, "The insight that has given me, the understanding that has given me, the experience of reality that has given me, makes me wonder whether I would have been better for the last 23 years, 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening, religiously. It makes me wonder if for the last 23 years I would have been better off spending those 20 minutes in the morning and in the evening scratching my backside. I would have probably got more relief." What had happened before we meditated together that morning? Very simply, he learned something that, generally speaking, people who practice meditation do not learn, or at the very least, do not learn in advance of beginning their practice of meditation. He learned why meditation is a necessity in our lives and what meditation does to the very structure of our brain, enabling us experience the reality of the here and now, having lifted the fog of thought. Let's break that down piece by piece. I said that he was meditating morning and night religiously, and that goes back to the fact that actually some people do think that meditation is a religious experience. Just a religious experience. We've talked before about organized religion and how organized religions the world over have hijacked something far more fundamentally important to us, our own spirituality. But then again, spirituality is a greatly misunderstood word. People tend to think, and again, that's the rock you'll perish on, that when we talk about spirituality, we're going off into a world that has little relationship with the cut and thrust and ups and downs and challenges of ordinary everyday life. For example, as a very good friend of mine growing up in Dublin in the 1980s said to me, he had friends in Belfast, in the north of Ireland, and we had the Troubles, the so-called Troubles in the north of Ireland at the time. He had grown up in Belfast and he had friends in Belfast who would go to Sunday Mass, kneel and receive Holy Communion, say their prayers devoutly on a Sunday morning, and on a Sunday afternoon go out and blow somebody up. Where was the relationship between that spirituality and the cut and thrust and challenges of the real world? It's an extreme example, but then again, as both An online program owner and myself agreed in a one-to-one a couple of days ago, and some people won't like what I'm about to say. Some of the worst people in the world are spiritual people. Some of the worst people in the world are so-called do-gooders. As Tony DeMello says, an awful lot of do-gooders do good because if they didn't, they feel as if they were doing bad. Anyway, that's an aside. That's something else entirely. Although it is and it isn't, because 96% of people that you will cross today are what I would describe as normal, crazy people. They are, as we explained at the beginning of this episode, not all there. And therefore, they're likely to do the most awful things. And you'll think, if you're using your mind normally, that they're doing those awful things to you. No, they're not. They're just doing it completely unwittingly because they haven't turned up to their own lives. They're living in the whirlwind of repetitive thoughts from their childhood. As I said, we all are until we start to meditate. Meditation enables us to take control of our state of mind. A state of mind is often confused with emotion. An emotion is often confused with some kind of gut reaction that is real. There are really only two emotions in the world: primal fear, on the one hand. In other words, if you are confronted by a man or a woman eating beast and you are suddenly afraid, that's not the normal fear that people feel when they get up in the morning to face into a day of work that they don't like or a boss that's bullying them. That's a different kind of fear, which I'll come back to in a moment. Primal fear, when we're confronted by a life-threatening situation, when you're crossing the level crossing and your stiletto heels get caught in the tracks and there's an express train coming straight for you. That's a good time to be afraid. Primal fear on the one hand, and unconditional love on the other. When we fall in love with a newborn child who we've never even met before. We don't know them, but they are perfect. They are ours. And we cannot help ourselves but to love them. When you fall in love with somebody who you actually fall in love with, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. And it's like as if you've fallen into a whole new experience of life. The two real emotions, primal fear and unconditional love. And by the way, as an aside, but a very important aside, I've just said that when you see a newborn child for the first time, they are perfect. What happens after that is a tragedy. Because as we said last week, and in a couple of episodes recently, over the course of the next 3 years, they will learn that they are not perfect. And they will carry that learning through the rest of their lives, divorcing themselves from the reality that they are perfect as a result of the thoughts that they use automatically to enable them to understand, or in fact, misunderstand the reality of what is going on. Now, if you do misunderstand the reality of what is going on, as we said a couple of minutes ago, it is impossible to take real action. We can only take real action when we are in charge of our own state of mind. If we don't meditate, we will never take control of our own state of mind. Instead, the noise in our own head, the thoughts that we've been carrying around since we were young and impressionable, control our mind. And our mind controls us. It's the definition of madness. I'm not in control of my own mind. Meditation is the only scientifically validated way we have of being in control of our own mind. That is the second thing that my friend, the transcendental meditator, learned on the first morning of our 3 day workshop before we meditated together for the first time. So we learned two things. Number one, meditation is a necessity, because if you don't meditate, you'll never take control of your own state of mind. And secondly, that when you do meditate, the very process of paying attention to your five senses, what the University of Massachusetts Medical School called coming to your senses, that very process will not just enable you experience reality now, but it will change the very structure of your brain. Most recent research shows that people in their mid-70s, specifically 75 years of age, in research have been found to have restructured the key components of their subcortical brain within a matter of 8 weeks when they started to meditate for the first time in their lives at 75 years of age. In other words, you're never too old for your life to begin. What happens when we meditate? First of all, when we sit down to meditate and we pay attention to perhaps our breathing or what we're feeling, the part of our brain that closed down when we were 12 or 13 years of age is turned on. It's in the left prefrontal cortex of the brain. It's called the attentional spotlight. And rightly so, because it is our ability to shine a light on what is actually happening in the here and now. It's also known in cognitive psychology as the center of conscious awareness or the center of focus. Consider that, because if you are using your mind normally, that part of your brain, the center of focus, is turned off. You're experiencing or misexperiencing your life through the fog of thought, and you are unable to focus. So until you start to meditate, you will not be able to focus. I didn't say focus properly, I said focus full stop. Meditation turns on the attentional spotlight in the left prefrontal cortex of the brain. Over time, and by the way, the most recent research shows that in just 5 days, the shape of the left prefrontal cortex will have begun to change. Over time, and most of the research is done over 8 weeks, and that's simply as a result of the fact that science builds on science. And the original mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy developed by the aforementioned University of Massachusetts Medical School in the 1980s was an 8-week program. That's why most of the research in relation to meditation and its effects on the brain are done over an 8-week period. But as I said, the latest research shows that the restructuring of the brain begins within 5 days of your sitting down to meditate for the first time in your life. Meditation turns on the attentional spotlight, it restructures the attentional spotlight, and because the attentional spotlight is now on, the attentional spotlight takes up its key role in managing your state of mind. And that role is as the conductor of the orchestra. It conducts the key components of your subcortical brain, specifically the insula, the amygdala, and the hippocampus, to enable them restructure themselves, first of all, and then interact with each other in a way in which they would only otherwise interact were you to find yourself in a life-threatening situation. You see, evolution gave us a brain that ensures that we pay full attention to a life-threatening situation. Through meditation, you enable the part of the brain that only was designed to focus on threat to be able to focus on opportunity as well. Quote from an online program owner, somebody who was one of those people to whom I referred earlier on when they woke up in the morning and said, "Oh my God, I can't stand another day of this horror." He told me that when we met first, he felt as if he was drowning, that his life was such a mess he was literally going under. After just a few sessions of the online program, and by the way, the online program to which I'm referring is the Psychology of Success online program, but after just a few sessions of that, and after beginning to meditate, he realized I wasn't drowning. I was swimming in a sea of opportunity. But because my eyes were closed, because I was dead to the reality of the world, I thought I was drowning. I couldn't see the opportunities. I was blinded by thought. But once his subcortical brain began to restructure itself, he realized that opportunity abounds. And opportunity abounds in your life today. You will not notice it if you are not awake. You will not see it if you are blind, if you are blinded by your own thoughts. You need to come to your senses. You need to start meditating. Now, people have said to me over the years, is meditation kind of akin to self-hypnosis? And my answer has always been that it is the exact opposite. When we meditate, we awaken from the hypnotic state under which our thoughts have had us all of our adult life. And we begin to see reality as it is. And reality is wonderful because reality is a state of flow in which, through meditation and through developing our ability as a result of meditation to allow our bodily energy flow, we become synchronized with the flow of universal energy. And it is on the flow of universal energy that opportunity presents itself. Now, you might say to yourself, oh, that sounds a little woo-woo. That's kind of a little airy-fairy. I'm talking about the hard sciences of bioelectricity and modern quantum physics that actually prove that the world works in a way that is completely different from what we learned from the point that we were perfect as an infant to 3 or 4 years of age. When we ended up thinking that not only were we not perfect, but we were damaged goods in need of redemption, in need of education to better ourselves. You need to awaken from the hypnotic trance state in which your own thoughts have had you so that you can experience the reality of the here and now. The most important thing that my transcendental meditator friend realized on his first morning with me was that we don't meditate to release ourselves from the hypnotic trance-like state of thought whilst we're meditating. We meditate so that we are free of that thought during the cut and thrust of the day. If you're one of these people who has been meditating and don't understand the science behind it and don't understand the impact that it has on the subcortical brain and the neural pathways and the neural connections in our subcortical brain, if you've just been meditating because you think it's a nice thing to do or it makes you feel good for 20 or 30 minutes in the village hall on a Thursday evening, and it has made no difference in the rest of your life or precious little difference, then you're actually missing the key point about meditation. And it's funny, even though regular meditation in the parish hall or the village hall on a Thursday evening will begin to restructure your brain, it seems to me that the understanding that that is what it is doing is actually key to enabling meditation give you what you're really looking for in your life, an experience of your life in the here and now today, an experience of the opportunity in the here and now, an experience of the fact that you don't need a lucky break. You need to just turn up to your own life. In other words, we meditate to be cool, calm, and collected at 7 a.m. in the morning so that we're cool, calm, and collected in the cut and thrust of our day, so that we don't react to the normal madness that is going on all around us. And normal madness it is. So we don't get dragged into the dramas into which normal crazy people want us to go. They don't want us to be part of their drama so that we might help them. They want us to be part of their drama because they're just looking for attention, because they think they're so imperfect, they need the attention and approval of others. We talked about the drug of approval a couple of weeks ago. You need to meditate. You need to understand why you are meditating. Another aspect of that, of course, is that, and research again has shown this in detail, in particular neuroscience over the last few years, that if you don't understand why you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you'll find what you're supposed to be doing very, very difficult indeed to do. Once you know the why, it becomes so much easier. And that leads me on to, of course, one of the big questions that people ask me. Why am I really meditating? What do I really want out of my life? What am I going to discover about myself when my brain begins to restructure itself and I begin to experience the reality of the here and now? Well, the first and easiest answer to all those questions is that when we begin to experience reality, we begin to experience the reality of who we really are, that perfection that I mentioned in a newborn baby. A perfect part of the universe that can live, really live, and experience real living moment to moment in tune with the reality of the universe as a result of my allowing my thoughts dissipate. You see, people think, and again, that's the rock you'll perish on, that they need to have a row with themselves about pushing their thoughts away. Because when everybody sits down to meditate for the first, second, or perhaps 100th time, their peace and quiet will be invaded by the noise in their own head. People try to push those thoughts away. You don't push those thoughts away. You embrace the distraction of your own thoughts in the moment as an opportunity for you to deepen your ability to practice being present in the moment. You don't get rid of anything in your life by trying to push it away. You get all the best in your life by simply turning up to the sea of opportunity in the here and now. It's an adventure. It's a wondrous adventure. An adventure filled with experiences and events and people that your thinking mind could never even begin to expect might come your way. It's an adventure that awaits you. It's an adventure that awaits us all. All we have to do is take the little step daily of meditation to enable us be in control of our state of mind. Know what is going on. Know what is best for us to do in the moment as a result of knowing what is going on. And by that I mean knowing what is best for us to do in the broadest scheme of things, because when you begin to discover the real you through meditation, you will realize that the real you knows what is best for you, which, as we've said on a number of occasions before, is an entirely different proposition to what we think we want. When we are present, we know what is going on. We know what we need to do, what is best for us to do at that moment in time, and we just do it. Because regardless of how difficult we might think what we have to do might be, it's only thinking that stops us doing everything that we need to do in our lives effortlessly. The effort comes from thinking, the struggle comes from thinking, the wondering when my lucky break is going to come comes from thinking, the struggling through, oh, just another day, comes from thinking. This is not just another day. This is the day on which you wake up. You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go.
And for more information, visit www.willie-horton.com.